This is OPB News, and I'm Christian Foden-Wenzel. 1 million people die from malaria every year. Most of them are children who live in sub-Saharan Africa and poor sections of Southeast Asia. Malaria treatments there are far and few between. But because of a fresh influx of millions from wealthy locals, the Pacific Northwest is home to several labs focusing on malaria and other parasitic diseases. Ethan Lindsay reports on these projects, including one in Seattle that is paying people to test malaria vaccines.
Ask a handful of people whether they'd be willing to take part in a perfectly safe medical study for which they'd be paid several thousand dollars, and you get a fair amount who'd say, yeah.
Absolutely. That's a no-brainer.
But then tell them the study involves possibly being infected with malaria, and you have quite a few who think twice.
I don't think I'm bold enough to do it. I kind of like not having any diseases.
Dr. Patrick Duffy will be running just such a trial in the future. In fact, several of them. He's the director of the malaria program at the Seattle Biomedical Research Institute. It's funded with Gates Foundation money and affiliated with the University of Washington. And Duffy's heard from thousands of willing volunteers who weren't frightened away. He says he thinks the interest is partly profit motive. People are interested in getting a quick, though not necessarily painless, $1,000 payday. But he also thinks people, especially those in the Pacific Northwest, are more aware of global health problems than they used to be.
I think that the reason that people are interested in this in general is their awareness of the suffering. And to be presented in our communities where we don't have any malaria with the opportunity to do something, I think that that inspires people to think that this is something I can contribute to.
Buddy Ullman is a biologist and professor at Portland's Oregon Health and Science University. He researches malaria and other diseases. Ullman says Seattle and the Northwest may have a more globally aware citizenry, and he thinks the reason Northwesterners are more aware is in part because there's a lot of education going on here.
Particularly with the Gates Foundation supporting global efforts to eradicate and treat parasitic disease, I think there's a big focus there.
In the future, at the vaccine trials in Seattle, volunteers will first be treated with a test vaccine and then get infected with malaria.
We are already growing mosquitoes, and we put the mosquitoes into a small ice cream container, and we can just put that next to somebody's skin, and the mosquitoes will feed on their skin.
Duffy says for a week after that, people can go about their daily lives, go to work, sleep next to their spouses. After a week or so, researchers will then put up volunteers in a hotel room and continually monitor their health. Some vaccines will work, Duffy says, and some won't. In the latter case, people will be given a drug that will quickly cure them.
It is a parasite that we know exactly the drugs that it's sensitive to, that we understand very well. It will infect people, and that's why after this sort of quiet period, we start following people twice a day.
Despite the optimism, Ullman says volunteers shouldn't look at it as just another way to make a buck.
People are getting paid a lot of money to get exposed to the malarial parasite, and some of these people will get sick. The listeners do not want to acquire falciparum malaria. That's not a fun disease.
The Seattle Biomedical Research Institute says it hopes to begin the formal trials by next year. It's still accepting volunteer applications from all over the Northwest. Ethan Lindsay, OPB News.
As Oregon businesses try to create a critical mass of solar power companies here, some individuals are doing their part by installing panels on their roofs. For anyone who's been thinking of doing the same thing, it can be a complex decision. How much will it cost? How long will it take to recoup that cost, if ever? Lark Ryan runs an arts and crafts business out of her Southeast Portland home. She decided to go solar about 6 months ago. I asked her why.
Well, we actually came to it not so much as a financial decision, because you do get free electricity from your solar panels, but in terms of reducing our carbon footprint, you can tell at a website like carbonfootprint.com what you generate in the way of carbon by driving, using electricity, and that sort of thing. And if you plug in to their calculator, we discovered that versus buying a hybrid car, we would be benefiting the environment more by installing solar panels. So that's what we went ahead and did.
And how much did it cost you to install, and how long, if ever, will they pay for themselves?
It's a complicated question, but I'll try to simplify it because there are so many incentives. If you start, say, with a little under $20,000, it was the sticker price, say, then the Energy Trust of Oregon gives you what is essentially a coupon. So that brings it down maybe a little less than a quarter. And then there are some pretty impressive tax incentives, both federal and state, that bring it down even more. And as a business, it'll take about 3 years for us to break even. As a residence, it takes about 11 years to pay off. And those are rough numbers.
And this is for a regular house, maybe 2,000 square feet, that kind of thing?
Yeah, a little less. Ours is fairly modest.
All right. And how's it gone so far? You installed it in November.
Yes.
And do you get any power when it's kind of a raining, cloudy Oregon winter?
Yeah, I actually was quite surprised. I went out in the pouring rain to check the little box that has the number readout, and it does generate power even in the pouring rain. But, of course, around the winter solstice, there's not much daylight. We did notice on our monthly statement that we get from PGE that even in February, the last month, not the sunniest month as we know, we generated over a quarter of our power. So that seemed pretty good.
And in the summer, you would expect to actually generate more than your own power and then send it back into the grid. How much more do you think?
That's right. Well, what we were estimated by our solar contractor that did the installation is averaged over the year, we would wipe out our power bill completely.
Is solar power for everybody now you've gone through the rigmarole of putting it up there? Would you like to see everybody do it, or should some people do it and some people not?
Well, you certainly can't have a shady site. It helps to have your roof slope facing south. And since ours faced east and west, what we did was with our flat roof garage, which many homes in Oregon have a detached flat roof garage, we just kicked it up on a rack at about 30 degrees.
Well, what about the curb appeal of your home? You say you put it on a flat roof on the garage. Now you've got some industrial panels sticking out of the garage. I don't know whether your garage is tucked away behind the house, but some people may look at that and go, ooh, that looks a little bit odd.
Well, it's a little surprising when you first see it, but they're really quite sleek. There's no moving parts, and my neighbor's cats are always climbing up them, so that's pretty cute. They do say that it'll increase the resale value of your home because you've essentially got your own little power plant there, which is a money saver.
Lark Ryan runs a small arts and craft business out of her home and recently decided to go solar. Portland General Electric says it has about 300 residential customers with solar power on their roofs, but that number is growing fast. Want to know more? The Northwest Solar Expo is scheduled to start at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland tomorrow and run through the weekend. No Oregon police officer approaching a citizen wants the situation to turn tense. But each year, dozens of officers draw their guns when they fear a suspect poses a threat to the community. This spring, communities around Oregon are trying to improve follow-up on these deadly incidents, in accordance with Senate Bill 111. The bill was designed to set standards for how police, sheriffs, and other law enforcement officers investigate and prevent these encounters. Every county must sign off on the bill. Many, like Multnomah, are using this month to see what their citizens think. Sam Sachs is taking part in this process in Multnomah County. He's the citizen member of the planning board that's holding hearings this week. Good morning, Mr. Sachs.
Good morning.
So Senate Bill 111 spells out what should happen after deadly force is used, how to investigate, be sure to convene a grand jury, and make sure officers get counseling, etc. But there's nothing in here about how these incidents escalate. Why was it designed this way?
Well, it was designed to address several issues, a few of which you mentioned. Aftermath, discretion by the district attorney, and the investigation. The issue around escalation is addressed in the community outreach, education, and training, and outreach, education, and training for district attorney and police officers. So that piece there is where we hope to prevent escalation through outreach, education, and training, and forming a relationship and communication really between police and community.
Okay. Well, so how much room is there for flexibility in the county's policies? You know, for example, how might Multnomah County's plan be different than, say, Malheur County's plan?
Well, what I've seen so far from the committee is there's a lot of flexibility. We've taken input and heard from many citizens in the community. So the difference from Multnomah County and Malheur County is the diversity in Multnomah County versus Malheur County. And the needs of the community, and the committee and the planning authority are open to hearing what that education, what that outreach, and what that training should look like for Multnomah County. So I think that that's where the flexibility is, and this committee is really dedicated to hearing from the community.
Mm-hmm. What are you trying to get out of the hearings this week?
What we really want to accomplish is to hear back from the community. As I said, we've heard from several members already over the course of this planning authority meetings, but what we really want to accomplish is to get people to come out. Senate Bill 111 calls for us to have one public hearing, which most counties have done. We felt it was necessary to have three and to have them in different parts of the county so that we could reach out to the community and the community members would have more than just one opportunity to come to give their feedback and to express themselves, and because this is a very important issue for so many people in our community. So that's what we hope to accomplish, is to hear from community members and to take that input and put it into the final draft that we will give to the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, Oregon's Black and Latino communities are deeply concerned about the use of deadly force. Have you heard much about their concerns?
Yes, we have. We've been very committed to that. We've heard from Jerry Washington at Oregon Action, Dan Handelman at Portland Cop Watch. We've heard from the Latino Network, but we still need more people to come out and to contact us. We're going to have a meeting this evening at Portland Lutheran High School in Gresham, and then one at Highland Christian Church in Northeast Portland. So the Black and Latino community are on our minds, and we are reaching out to them, and we'll continue to do that. We just encourage, as a citizen rep, I encourage people to try to get to these meetings or to try to contact me with their insight.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Sachs.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We've been speaking with Sam Sachs. He and others who've worked on the Multnomah County plan invite you to a pair of hearings tonight in Gresham and Thursday night in Portland on police use of force. Information can be found at the website for the Multnomah County District Attorney. A new study is concluding that global warming is worse in the Northwest than in the nation as a whole. By factoring in last year's temperatures, the report found that inland areas, including eastern Oregon and Washington, are heating up most quickly. Oregon leaders are under pressure to respond, as Rob Manning reports.
The report came out of the Rocky Mountain Climate Organization. It's a consortium of business, government, and nonprofit groups based in Colorado. Stephen Saunders is the founder and the author of the new report, which is called Hotter and Drier, the West's Changed Climate. It used temperature data from as recently as last year. Bottom line, Saunders says, it's nearly 1.5 degrees hotter here than normal.
We analyzed temperature data going back 100 years and looked at the trend. And in Oregon and in Washington, we see that the interior parts of the state, when you get east of the mountains, are the areas that have warmed the most.
Using the 2007 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change study and updated temperatures, the Hotter and Drier report found that temperatures in some locations have risen 70% faster than the nation as a whole. Precipitation patterns are also changing. Saunders says all the data confirms two things: that greenhouse gases are changing the Western climate quickly, and that humans are to blame.
This is no longer just consistent with the projections. This is actually happening now. If we have climate change happening now, measured as our temperature going up and our water patterns changing, then all these other impacts that scientists have said, well, that's consistent with the projections, now we can say that those, too, are also coming from the human effect.
Oregon Governor Ted Kulongoski and other leading Democrats made global warming a major focus of the 2007 legislative session. Kulongoski's sustainability advisor, Dave Van Toff, says 2009 will be another big year for climate change. He says the agenda will be about responding to the results of global warming, like shrinking water supplies. He says efforts will focus on conservation, but won't stop there.
And also looking at new storage opportunities over time, because the reality is we have declining snowpack and declining water resources in the summer months when we have the most need for both municipally and from an irrigation perspective. So we're going to need strategies to deal with that change over time.
Vantoff says lawmakers will also get a broad transportation package, with everything from planning roads around rising sea levels to more actively encouraging people to take public transit. Much of the work being done in Oregon is still in the study phase. Work groups are looking into how to improve energy efficiency and increase renewable power supplies, and one group made up of Western states and Canadian provinces is hashing out the details of a carbon cap and trade system. It's looking toward meeting greenhouse gas reduction goals set for 2020. Some Oregon advocates say that achieving climate goals beyond that will only come with a quantum leap in technology. Rob Manning, OPB News.